has been an awakening. Have you felt it?
Light it up.
Punch it.
Welcome to Unmistakably Star Wars, your source for a high-quality, informative, and entertaining look into the Star Wars galaxy. So strap yourself in, because here's where the fun begins.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to, by the way, Unmistakably Star Wars' recap show for The Mandalorian. My name is Gina, and tonight I am joined by Carl. Hello, Carl.
Gina, this episode, I cannot, we got a week and a half, this episode, so much happened. Gina, I'm stressed, I can't, oh, my goodness, okay.
I was telling you this a little bit before, I'm calm. Mm-hmm. Because I'm still processing, because normally I watch it twice, and this time I only had a chance to watch it once, and I actually just finished the episode like 15 minutes ago,
yeah.
So I'm still just like, actually, Eve texted me, mm-hmm. and she was like, are you done? And I was like, I have 13 minutes left, and she was like, text me when you're done. And as soon as it was over, like, my exact texts were like, it was like, oh, that is not how it ends. Next one. Am I missing something? There has to be more. My heart is my heart because credits are rolling. Mm-hmm. And so like now I'm like getting my animation back. So I'm just like, no, that really ended that way.
Mm-hmm. Now just imagine that you're, I don't know, 9 years old and you're watching Empire Strikes Back at the theater and they just like they fly off and look for Han and it's like, that's it. That's how it is. So it's like, and then you had to wait 3 years to find the ending. At least we only have to wait a week and a half to find out what happens here. And this is such a great time to be a Star Wars fan because we actually, tomorrow night, will be watching The Rise of Skywalker. And then at that point, yes, we will want to know what happens to YOLO and what's going to happen with the Mando. But we'll also have our mind preoccupied with, pondering that movie. Will we be elated? Will we be excited? Will we need to see the movie again and ponder it? So we're going to have something to tide us over. But yeah, it's like right now I'm like, what are y'all doing to us?
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, oh, did you move this from Friday to Wednesday? Because you know our hearts, you knew that like something would happen to tie it together. Yeah. And it's like, no, they just knew our hearts would be broken.
Well,
and they were like, we'll give you this other thing.
I think they moved it so that, people wouldn't be competing with the movie over the weekend. But more, I think there is something in there that they wanted to have seen before the movie came out. So, and we can talk about that later when we do the recap, or we can talk about it now. It's up to you.
Sure, go ahead. We can talk about it now.
Okay. Well, because, the thing is, what they could have done, they could have just said, hey, we're going to take this week off, and then did the last two after, cause especially since they're, and I kind of suspected the last two would be kind of tied into like one cliffhanger and then the finale. They could have done that. They could have said, hey, we built up the series. Go watch The Rise of Skywalker. Come back next week. We'll do one. Then we'll do the next one. And that's how we'll wrap it up. But I think they wanted us to see YOLO healing grief before we went to see Rise of Skywalker.
Oh, okay.
And I think part of that is, well, a two-part thing. I'm saying that because I think we're going to see some sort of force healing in Rise of Skywalker. And I think a lot of the, not a lot, just one of the things that people pushed back on was, wait a minute, what is this Mary Poppins, Leia coming through space? We've never seen that before. Even Rian Johnson had the nice little Twitter thread where he had all the pictures of like getting closer to the bookshelf and pulling off a book about the Force and then opening up and saying that sort of thing. Or was it Force Projection? One of the two. But anyway, it was some sort of, there were things in The Last Jedi we saw that people said, well, we've never seen that before. That's not what you can do with a Force. So I think they wanted to, have it established somewhere else before the movie. So when the movie comes out and we see some sort of force healing that it's not like, well, they just made that up for this movie. So that's my theory on why they did it. And that probably, and that to me explains why the episodes were released the way they were, like one immediately when it came out and then immediately on a Friday. And then now we're putting one on a Wednesday to be sure we have it before the movie. But we didn't get it in before, like, you know, like last Friday or whatever. So that's my theory on what we saw in this show that they wanted us to see before the movie. Because Jon Favreau has said, you know, this movie impacts, or this show, The Mandalorian, impacts The Rise of Skywalker in a big way. And that's the only thing I've seen so far that I would imagine, you know, other than our theories on what they're wanting to do with Baby Yoda.
I cannot believe that in 24 hours I will be able to say, mm-hmm. oh yeah, that's completely right. I see where you were talking about. That's where that happened. Like, we're going to have The Rise of Skywalker for those of us seeing it on Thursday.
Yes.
You're right. What a time to be a Star Wars fan.
I know. It's so good. It's so good. And, you know, there's, I know everybody's like, the Mando's not everybody's Star Wars, but, you know, The Last Jedi wasn't everybody's Star Wars either. And what I wish we could do, and I don't, you know, it's kind of hard to do in, you know, in the world at all, in America at this time, but just if this is not your particular Star Wars, that's fine, but kind of be happy for the people who are getting to see it, and then vice versa when whatever happens in The Rise of Skywalker comes out, or whatever the next show is, or the next set of movies are. It's really hard because the fans have, there's really, it's getting more and more diverse, I guess, and so there's going to be things that appeal to some that don't appeal to others. And so I would just, it's okay if you don't like something and you can critically say, you know, that wasn't my favorite, but, you know, the people who just sort of want to burn down everything if it's not exactly the way they want it, you know, I wish we could be more like, that's not my favorite Star Wars, I'm gonna watch it and support the franchise, that I've seen plenty of things that I like, this is more geared to someone else maybe, but maybe I can get something out of it. And I'm going to be happy for them and not just say, well, if it's not specifically for me and it's not fitting my bill, then I'm going to just say how everything is terrible and cause, you know, be a troll on Twitter or whatever. You know, whatever happened to just being happy for somebody else and being glad that somebody else has something good going on for them? Whatever happened to that, Gina?
I have no idea because I feel like it has not existed as long as I have been alive. But I'm very optimistic and hopeful that something like that can happen after the rise mm-hmm. of Skywalker. I have been staying away from Twitter because I don't want to see TV mm-hmm. spots. I don't want to see interviews.
Right.
In fact, I was very cautious. I just watched the cast play Family Feud on Jimmy Kimmel, like a YouTube clip. And I was like kind of cautious the whole time. Yeah. Didn't go on any of the comments because I was like, someone's mm-hmm. going to accidentally or on purpose spoil me.
yeah.
And so I might stay away a little bit after the show, or I might just get on because I've missed Twitter. But
yeah.
I'm hoping that when I do log on, it's positive, it's peaceful, mm-hmm. and it is legitimate, constructive criticism.
You're right.
And yes. not any of the hate, I am hoping.
mm-hmm. I hope so too. Did you see do you watch through the credits when you are watching the show?
I do normally. This time I did mm-hmm. not because we were coming up yes. for yeah, this. Time, I did see crunch. Before that, they were like, stick around or there's an exclusive for The Rise of Skywalker. And I said, turn off.
Yes.
I immediately.
That's that's what I was going to ask you about. Because it's normally, unless you're like behind on episodes, which, you know, what kind of, you're not a real true fan if you're behind on episodes. I'll tell you that right now. No, I'm just kidding. But usually, you know, if it's not like, here's the next episode of The Mandalorian, they always suggest Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I enjoyed that movie. I like it. But I'm doing something else right now. But that was like, instead of that Darth Vader, you know, in Cloud City image, we had the sneak peek. And I was like, don't I? I was like, and I looked at it, it was like a minute 31. I'm like, yeah, I don't think they're going to ruin anything. And I went ahead and watched it. And so it was, I mean, it didn't ruin anything. It just sort of had a little bit of an extended scene of something you've already seen in a clip. It gave nothing away. But it still made me a little more excited about, you know, seeing the movie. And so I'm going to do it. I'm going tomorrow night.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. On that note, let's get into this episode. So this is our episode 7. Chapter 7, titled The Reckoning. It was directed by Deborah Chow, welcome back, and Jon Favreau.
Oh, yes.
And its original release date was December 18th on Disney+.
Can I say, you mentioned Deborah Chow directing, and I just want to say, I think she's probably directed my two favorite episodes of the show so far. And so, I don't know, other than, you know, the problem that we have of not having enough women behind the camera, we all have said, or most everybody, you know, the people that we hang out with on Unmistakably Star Wars have said, they're more than capable, give them a chance, let's do this. And, you know, maybe she just had the best, you know, happened to be the ones that were also the best scripts too, but I don't think that's it. I think she did a great job directing, because you think back to episode 3, what was that one even called? It wasn't The Child. It was,
3's anyway. The Sin.
The Sin, that's right. The Sin, great episode. This one, a great episode. So, Deborah Chow, and so it also makes me excited for Kenobi, which, I mean, I wanted to see Kenobi anyway. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm looking forward to that anyway. Anything they put out there. I mean, I'm just one of those. I watch anything that's Star Wars, and so I'm excited about it. But she's, you know, we talked about how she's show running, I don't know, maybe, but at least directing, or seems to be kind of the person at the helm right now of Kenobi. So excited for that.
Yeah, I do know both of her episodes, for me, ended with the biggest, mm-hmm. like, what? What's happening? Mm-hmm. That just happened. Mm-hmm. And so I yeah. am really, really excited for her. But speaking of what excites us, I want to go ahead and get mm-hmm. into who or what collected the bounty for us this week.
Okay.
And so mm-hmm. what was your bounty moment?
You know, I almost want to say, I'll say this gets an honorable mention, because I really didn't care about it as much till the second time. But the Werner Herzog scene where he is the client and he's in the bar and he's talking about all the things, how things were so much better on the Empire no matter how you measure it, and he just listed all these things. Just the way he enunciates everything, and that accent sounds sort of evilish, I guess, because, you know, how we feel about, you know, Germany and World War II type of deal. So those accents sometimes can really be played to represent evil in movies and characters. So, you know, how he's very convicted of how, well, everything was better back then, and he lists all the things, but it's like, yeah, you know, you could say that for a lot of people in a lot of those areas, but the problem is, you know, you're forgetting the most important thing that people, you know, at least here in the United States and parts of the world, treasure most is freedom. So sometimes people would rather have less of other things that are tangible and measurable, mm-hmm. but still have the freedom to do the things they want to do. And so, and if you, it's good, all those things are good for you too, as long as you're doing what the Empire says. But if you go against what the Empire stands for in any ways, you're probably going to be crushed under their boot. So the way he delivered it, and just kind of like, you know, trying to think about it, because a lot of times when the bad guy starts talking, you're like, oh, he's wrong, he's terrible. But it's like, well, he's not wrong necessarily. He's wrong, and he's not wrong in what he's saying, you know. All those things can be measured, and they probably were better, security, and, you know, economics, all those things, peace. But at what price? Mm-hmm. So that's what I kind of like that. And it was probably one of the slower moments of the episode. So at first I wasn't even on my list of things I might want to consider. What I actually liked was when Quill was doing the flashback montage of getting IG-11 and retraining him and putting it back together. I mean, it's like, you know, I guess I know that Ugnaughts have, they're very mechanically oriented, and they're good, and that's why you get help put the ship together. We see them in Cloud City kind of messing around with androids and stuff like that. They seem to be very gifted mechanically. But the way he went in there and was, you know, holding IG-11 after he had, you know, found him, and it was almost like it was like, you think, well, that's how you would hold a real person, but, you know, we don't see droids that way, but he does. And so he held him tenderly, took him back, was very patient with him. And it was like, I was thinking, I was watching that, and I was like, I wish I could be a father like, you know, Quill is to IG-11. He seems so, like, I was patient, I showed him, I trained him. And then there was so much that opened up about how droids are looked at. You know, the Mando seems to, you know, he's like that racist person, you know, that won't admit they're racist. It's like, I've got a reason for not liking droids, that particular droid, but it applies to all droids too. So that it's, you try to talk to him about it, and he's like, nope, that droid's bad. And he has all these things. And then Quill's on the other hand saying, no, they're not good or evil. They're only are, you know, reflection of who they imprinted on. And then it's kind of that nature versus nurture argument, where Quill's saying, you know, it's how you're nurtured, and then a Mandalorian at one point even says, well, he can't overcome his nature. So that was pretty interesting, too, of looking at that. And then you can, you know, you look at a droid in the Star Wars universe, and you don't really necessarily have a feelings about it already, but then as you apply it to, you know, people in the rest of the world, it can kind of like make you think about how we feel about other people. So I like that part a lot.
So fun fact, we actually have the same bounty moment, because that was also...
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
Actually, I did too, and I took it away from you. I'm sorry.
That's also mine. And I loved it for every single reason that you said. And one of the mm-hmm. things that came to my mind when you were talking about the way that Quill was with him and mm-hmm. like kind of like cradling him in things, I thought about Lando mm-hmm. with L3. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah. I'm just like, now I'm thinking about L3's death, so now I'm just sad. But the yeah. other thing that came to my mind was, I was like, I started wondering how K2 was reprogrammed. And I was like, did mm-hmm. this much thought and effort go into K2 needing to be reprogrammed? And I never thought, and K2's like my favorite droid and one of my top favorite yeah. characters in Rogue One, but I never ever stopped to think for a moment, like, what was that process like for him to be reprogrammed? Mm-hmm. And I know that there were a lot of things with like Rogue One's like reshooting and whatnot and things like that. And so, but when you watch those scenes when they're like infiltrating and like, Cassian says something along the lines of, you know what you have to do, or something like that. And so there are missing mm-hmm. things where I'm like, okay, there's more than that. He had to tell K2, he had to convince him. Did K2 not want to do that? I've never seen extra scenes or bonus or deleted scenes and things like that. So, but like thinking about stuff like that, I'm like, so does K2 have some feelings about like impersonating this droid? Does he not want to? Does he not want to slip back in that headspace? What was it like for him to be reprogrammed? And now we have this footage and this mm-hmm. process of what it's like for at least one droid to be reprogrammed. So I'm just like, now mm-hmm. I just want to know what K2 was like. And I guess I'll find out, I mean, in this Cassian show that we're going to get on yeah. Disney+. So yay. But yeah, mm-hmm. I loved it on its own, for its own merit, for all the reasons you said in the scene, but also because it made me think mm-hmm. of my favorite droid.
Yeah, I always, to address the K2 thing, I always thought that it was like he was... not necessarily getting back in the headspace of that droid, but it looked like what he had to do to get the information out of that droid mm-hmm. basically killed it. Plus, I mean, I guess he had to incapacitate too, so it was almost like you have to betray your own kind, mm-hmm. you know, somebody who is like you. You have to treat them, you have to treat another droid as humans treat droids, you know. You have to see them as disposable, you have to see them as just a means to an end, and maybe he is conflicted about that part too. So, yeah, I mean, there is a whole world, very interesting, because, I mean, I have those thoughts, too, of, like, the argument that I, you know, referencing back to the argument we had in this episode, how much of droids are what you're programmed to do, and how much of them aren't? You know, R2-D2 seems very, like, he is above whatever programming he was put in him. Mm-hmm. You know, he seems to have his own personality, and then others that sometimes don't. But we know that the people... kind of look at droids as just machines, but I always felt that there's something more to it, and there's a whole lot of stuff you could, you know, interesting space there that I don't know, maybe people have explored in comics or novels or stuff, but there's a whole lot of interesting questions you can talk about how much of, you know, how much can they have their own, assert their own personality as a droid and overcome programming. And then of course it makes you reflect back on being a human. It's like a lot of times we excuse things we do because I can't help it, or this is just the way I am. I mean, I hear that from my kids all the time. I can't help this. I'm just, that's the way I am. It's like, no, we have, and I know there's different levels of stuff, so I'm not saying blanket to everybody, so don't be offended if I'm like, but there's a lot of times there is a choice that you can make in situations that goes against maybe how you strongly feel about it or what you've been taught about it, but you can, there is room for choice. I'll say that. I'm not saying there's always a choice or choice always overcomes. I know there's things like addictions and things, but, you know, at least in addictions, there's like choice to maybe seek help if you can afford it and have that opportunity, that sort of thing. So, you know, there is room for some choice in that. And do droids have that, like, you know, we as people have?
Someone write a thesis on it. And then what was your frozen in carbonite moment or person or thing?
Okay. So I don't take yours. Why don't you go first? I feel really bad about like taking two, and then, but there's so much. I mean, this episode is so full of good stuff, and I even said it. There's so much good stuff, and there's so much bad stuff, and there's so much bad stuff that actually is good stuff. But it just, you don't like, you know, how you feel about it. Yeah. But so if you want to go first, go ahead. I don't want to steal any thunder from
mine
you.
Mine was the ending. Like, okay. Like I understand, mm-hmm, that we're gonna, they have to give us some type of cliffhanger. Next week is the last episode. Mm-hmm. They have to build it up, the suspense and whatnot. So this has happened to me a couple times where like I'm paying attention, but I'm, mm-hmm, just like, oh, that's not real. So one example, this is like a spoiler if you didn't see the end of Game of Thrones, but like when one of the dragons got shot out the sky, and I was watching that episode, mm-hmm, and I was just like, oh, mm-hmm, that was a dream sequence. That's not real. And then the episode kept going, and I was like, wait a minute. And I like went back because I was like, did that just really happen? Yeah. So at the end, yeah, when Quill, like I was like, he's not dead. Yeah, there's a body right there, and yeah, they just scooped up Yellow, but he's not dead. And I went, yeah, back, and I was like, yeah, that's not true. And then I looked up like one of the review things online, and they were like, mm-hmm, his body. And I was like, but that's not true, right?
I mean, he looks dead. He does. They could, if they want to bring him back, they can. This but, is not. Yeah, he appears.
This is
dead.
Not like a Fennec situation. But I just wasn't. I wasn't expecting that at all. And mm-hmm, and I don't know if this mm-hmm is the. I know we've talked about this before, where it's like, this is Disney Plus. It's not Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we've seen, mm-hmm, death in this show, but we're not gonna see like. I don't know. I just, I wasn't ready for like the faves to get killed off, and that's what happened. Yeah. And so, mm-hmm, I get it as a story purpose. I get like, but still, I am so sad.
Yeah. 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 That was, I mean, I was sitting there with my wife, and she's like, you know, they open up first with Yolo laying there on the ground. She's like, what in the world? What's going, you know, just that scene shocking. Like, okay, that. We didn't see what happened. That needs to be explained. Mm-hmm. And as they pull back and they get, you know, the explanation's there. He was shot apparently from behind by the speeder, mm-hmm, bike, and they swoop in, like you said. And it was very like Harry Potter Quidditch. Like, I mean, those guys could really be good seekers on that. So because they just swooped in without really stopping, swooped up gently, you know, for how fast they were going, yeah, picked up Yolo, and they're back off to the town, to the city. So. But yeah, that's a hard way to end it, and then have to wait a week and, yeah, a half before we get an answer.
And every single time I see Yolo on the ground, like I lose a few years of my life. I'm just like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. So did I steal your moment then?
No, you didn't. Okay. And I had one. I'll say there's one that I was probably going to go with, but then the more I thought about it, I was like, no, that's actually good, and it kind of addresses the filler argument we talked about, or the filler, mm-hmm, or the stale question we talked about last week, or really, you know, half a week, you know, 4 days ago. But when he even makes a decision to go back to Nevarra and take a chance with Grief Karga, I'm like, you're an idiot. I mean, it's like, yes, I know you're going to be running for the rest of, you know, for, I don't know, the rest of your life or probably with Yolo, but at least you can be so spread them all out so far that they're coming at you maybe one at a time, and you have a better opportunity, and they would maybe be coming to you at a place where you're prepared for it. You're going back to a place where they're prepared for it, and they can have as many, you know, people around as they want. So my first thought was like, that's just a dumb decision. But then, you know, you go back to these last episodes 4, 5, and 6, and I think part of it was to show us just why he makes the decision he does. You know, a lot of times you mentioned Game of Thrones, you know, and then the complaint about that show in the end was, you know, I can kind of see why Daenerys and Jon were going the ways they were going, but you didn't develop it, mm-hmm, enough. And so this show, and so now people, we've developed the train of thought or the experiences that the Mandalorian has had, and now we're complaining because, well, that's just filler. It's just kind of a, you know, adventure of the week episode. But each one showed us something. Like, you know, well, first he met Cara Dune, but he also learned on Sorgrim that you can't go to an out of the way place where you know, backwater, where there's really not a lot of civilization, and think that you still have gone far enough to escape the reach, mm-hmm, of the hunters. And so, and then the next episode, he's already being, you know, flying through space, and there's one already attacking him, and he crashes on a planet. So it's like, you know, this running is going to maybe catch up to him. He crashes on, you know, Tatooine, basically, has to get a job. He's kind of lucky to get that job, get the money, but he's going to have to be hustling, you know, on the side, all these jobs to make money. He has to kind of be catching bounties to make money to avoid being caught by other bounty hunters. So, you know, that's going to catch up to you too. And then last week, it's like, well, maybe I'm going to try to go reach out to old associates. Well, old associates in the line of work he is, they're going to expect you to do something for them, and they hold grudges and try to kill you too. So, you know, there's just no good option for him to there's nothing he can really do. He's always going to be on the run, and eventually it's going to catch up to him. So if it's going to catch up to you eventually, maybe take that chance now that Karga is telling the truth, because that's the only opportunity you have to ever have a normal life with Yolo. So I think those episodes really did a good job of just where you might look at a decision somebody makes and they say, I have no choice, but you haven't seen the three episodes before. You go, well, did you really not have a choice? Mm-hmm. But, you know, that more than that, that you've seen his experience, you don't have a choice. So that's kind of what I thought might be a Frozen Carbonite, but the more I thought about it, I actually kind of liked it. So do you have any comments or thoughts about that?
No, I agree. I really like this continual debate on if something's filler, why is it filler? And mm-hmm. so I think back, I think it was Rebels when, is that what they're called? Purgles?
Purgles.
And Dave yeah. Filoni was like, I told you guys it wasn't filler. That was super important, blah, 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 blah. But honestly, right. I forgot about that episode and whatever episode that was mm-hmm. until he was like, see, isn't it important? And I went back and I was like, oh yeah, that was important and things like that. And so I love this conversation about whether something mm-hmm. should be like binged in one go or mm-hmm. every week, and if something counts as filler and what does it progress. Mm-hmm. And it's especially when you compare it to Game of Thrones, because that's my criticism of mm-hmm. the last season, is that I could see them eventually getting there, but it was rushed. And if you had shown me them getting there, it'd be more believable. And so I completely mm-hmm. see what you're talking about. If they hadn't shown getting there, we'd be like, it's rushed. Why would he do that? Well, we've seen how he operates in every situation. His decisions make mm-hmm. sense. And so we are completely mm-hmm. on the same page and know that is not a Frozen and Carbonite moment. So do you have a Frozen and Carbonite moment?
Yeah, I do. So my Frozen and Carbonite, we'll just stick with the Game of Thrones references here, is when the dragons from Game of Thrones attacked them on the lava field, swooping down out of nowhere, taking one of the bounty hunters, killing one of the blurgs. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was, you know, so, which was a good scene, but I just didn't see the explanation of why the people who had lived on this planet, such as Greef Karga and the Mandalorian, and suppose maybe these bounty hunters, were taken by surprise that there are giant flying dragons that come in, swoop down, and still, you know, that will take things as big as blurgs or people and carry them off and eat them. So it's like, why were you not prepared? I mean, at some point you're like, yeah, we have to build this, you know, we have to put a canopy over our fire so it's not, you know, or something. You know, like somebody's got to have watch. We have trap sets. Something that the people who live there would be like, yeah, we're used to these things, and we have developed a way to watch out for them. Or we know not to camp. It's like we would go, yeah, we're not going to walk a day, camp by the river, and go with us. We know we're going to go all the way into the city. Otherwise, we're going to be attacked by a giant dragon. So that was kind of my, at least if there had been some sort of explanation of why they were caught off guard, or you know, if they had to take precautions, or even mentioned, hey, we got to keep an eye out for, you know, whatever it is, giant Minox or whatever. But they just seemed ill-prepared for a place where they weren't strangers or new to, it seemed to me.
Yeah, and there's some things about that I want to get into. And so we'll mm-hmm. just go ahead and jump into our recap.
I shot a droid in the head because he wanted you dead. I grabbed your pram, then I fled, and now you are the way. Other hunters are scary, living on what we carry. Wished you'd find sanctuary, but now you are the way. The force I'm feeling, ripped wounds, now you're healing. My heart, now you're stealing. I will protect Yoda, baby. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but I want to be your daddy, maybe. It's hard to watch my Yoda baby, but I want to be than just a job. We're being chased by a mob. Everyone has a fob, but still you are the way. We must now live on the run. We might end up having fun. I'm proud to call you my son, 'cause now you are the way. The force of feeling, ripped wounds, now you're healing. My heart, now you're stealing. Who's after you, Yoda baby? Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but I want to be your daddy, maybe. Need a nanny for Yoda baby, but I want to be your daddy, maybe. Hey, I just met you, and this is crazy, but I want to be your daddy, maybe. And all the hunters try to chase me, but I want to be your daddy, maybe.
So, Grief, we open up with Grief offering the Mandalorian, like, a deal. And he's like, these Imperials or ex-Imperials have taken over the city because of the client. And he's like, if you use YOLO as bait, you come in, you kill the client, then we're, like, free in this town again, and you get to stop running. Which, I see what you were saying when you were, like, going through what you thought was going to be your Frozen and Carbonite moment. But then I also did think of the article that we talked about before where the author was like, well, once again, like Eve was saying, it's kind of like, oh, well, screw that guy's opinion a little bit. But like, I understand where he's coming from. And this episode is kind of sort of shaking that up a little bit. So if we were to go back to what he was saying, I'm sure he's got like rave reviews of it now.
Right.
And this was almost my bounty moment, just the fact that he goes back to get the people that we've seen. I just love that so much. So he goes back to get Cara Dune, and we see she's like in the middle of this fight. She's like tethered to this other guy, and she's just like continually finding them, and everyone's taking bets around them, and of course she wins because she's Cara Dune.
I mean, don't mess with Cara Dune.
Exactly. I'm just like, who is this guy and why did you do this in the first place? Mando comes up to her and he's like, are you looking for any more work? I have a job. And she's like, no, I can't get caught. I can't even be on this New Republic ship, blah, blah, blah. And he's just like, well, I have a ship. We'll go. We'll do this job. You'll get paid so much money, and then I'll just come and I'll take you back. And she's still, like, on the fence, but then he's like, they're Imperials. It's Imperials. And she's like, count me in. And I'm just like, oh, I knew you were going to come back. I knew I loved you. I'm so glad to see you again.
Now, did we get an answer that why there's bounties on her? To me, it seemed like it wasn't that she was AWOL. It seemed like, because I think the line was, you know, well, I've done other things since then. He's like, well, you know, you're a shock trooper, you're a veteran, I think is what the phrase he used. She's like, well, I've done other things since then. So it's almost like she's sort of gone and used her skills for underworld type jobs, maybe herself. And so now she's on the wrong side. And it doesn't seem, because she said, I can't go back and get on a New Republic ship. So my other theory had been maybe former Imperial people are after her for all the Imperials that she caught and took to the New Republic. But it's the New Republic. If she gets, you know, if her chain code is read by anyone it's associated with the New Republic, she'll be in a prison the rest of her life. So I guess she's sort of, you know, doing things on the side, kind of like Mando was, and things that were, you know, kind of skirt or were, you know, full out illegal. So that was interesting. I liked how they sort of gave us more insight into why she might think people or bounty hunters might be
and
after
then
her.
That also made me really excited, because that means that sometime we're gonna get, hopefully, like, the full backstory, and I am really pumped to find out what she has been doing all of her life. Which I do hope that we get that in the second season. There's nothing wrong with supplemental materials like books or comics and things, but I don't know, I just want to see, I want, for now, my opinion is that I want to see it all self-contained in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
So she agrees to go with him, And she remarks that they're going to need someone to watch YOLO. And I had to text.
Well, why did she remark that, though? She didn't just say it out of the blue.
Well, what happened?
Because the ship started, they were down below.
And he was playing. And the ship starts thinking. I was like, is he trying to get the ball thing again back? And the ship starts going. Well,
I couldn't tell if it was, we've seen him just try to get the ball and push buttons. And even when they got him off, they got the ship under control, he's in the background going for other buttons with it. But the way he was fighting with the joystick, my first impression, and then my wife said it when she watched it, is like, he doesn't want to go back. So I almost wondered if he being force sensitive, had some sort of vision of the future and was trying to avoid going to that place.
You see what happens, guys, when you don't watch an episode twice before you record.
No, I'd forgotten that part, too. When I watched it again, I was like,
At first, I was like, is someone attacking them? But then I was like, oh, it's just YOLO. YOLO messing with the controls. Yeah. This is another moment where me and Eve were texting, because after he's messing with the controls and Cara Dune's like, we need someone. We both thought of when I was like, he needs a babysitter.
Oh, yeah, the nanny. Gina shows up.
And so when she's...
I would have died if you had... You were like, aha, I'm telling a joke. But no, really, I went and I was on the last two episodes of The Mandalorian as the nanny. And Gina walks out. I would be like, oh, my goodness. But the good news is I would have had an end with Star Wars. Like, hey, can you give me some behind the scenes, access?
It's true, and you guys would have it. My mind went two places. The first one is, you guys, if you were like surprised at all that I was shocked that Quill died at the end, a second when she said that, I was like, wait, am I about to show up on the screen? And I was like, Gina, when did you have time to shoot this? I was straight up honest to God. I was like, am I about to come on the screen?
You're looking for theory. Okay, either I was hypnotized or there's a time travel where in the future I will come back in time and play this role. But I'm excited to see myself.
Yes, and then my other thought was, as soon as you said, Gina's the nanny, the theme song for, Fran Drescher's The Nanny started playing in my head. I was like, how do you make this Mandalorian themed?
Which would be the same plot, too, because the nanny was always trying to get the guy's attention, and maybe, they ended up getting married because she had a crush on him, so that would all work out for you as well.
I need Disney Plus to order that sitcom. I really want that now. And now the nanny theme song is straight up stuck in my head. Oh my goodness, this is perfect. But it's not me, of course. It's Quill.
Yeah, it's Quill.
And this is the part where they get there and we see the IG-11 droid. Mm. And my first thought was, honestly, I was like, yes, Taika, you're back. I know you're directing the last episode, but I just needed more of you. Mm-hmm. And so, yay for coming back as a droid. And this was a moment that I really, really appreciated, like we were talking about earlier. Mm-hmm. And this can be kudos to Deborah as a director or John Favreau for writing it in. But this could have just been he tells us that he reprogrammed IG-11.
Right.
And we just believe it. They didn't have to show all the care of this IG droid relearning everything. And part of me feels like, and this is coming to me as we're talking now, but going into the show, we all have our own feelings about droids and if we have a favorite droid and if we like droids. But we've spent the last 7 weeks with the Mandalorian saying, I don't like droids. I don't like droids. Mm-hmm. No droids. And so I could see how watching the show, no matter what you personally feel about droids, you can start to maybe sympathize with him, wonder why he doesn't like droids, all these things. And so from the character point, you can see why Quill would tell him all of these things. And then as an audience watching, you can be like, we've spent so many weeks saying no droids, essentially droids are bad. And then we get the story of change and what one could see as redemption. Because I feel like redemption is a essential theme in Star Wars.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And so I really like the care that was put into us seeing him be rehabilitated.
Yeah. And I even got, because they were trying to make it almost too like he was like an infant in the way he was shaking, couldn't even stand up and have balance in that first little clip of him when he was repaired. But also because there's so much, you know, war, we talk the word veteran in this, you know, there's so many soldiers, especially in this episode, kind of made me think about people who, you know, get injured in wars and then how mm-hmm. hard it is for them to, you know, and physically a lot of times when there's wounds, maybe they lose limbs and things, how hard it is for them to be real, how hard it is for them, and we kind of take that for granted. But not to mention, you know, the psychological impacts it has too. So a lot of times it's like when you come home from wars, it just sort of made me think about real veterans in our world, and then, you know, people who are, you know, injured in other ways too. But, you know, the difficulties they have to really have to go through to be able to move around and perform in the world again.
Yes, exactly. And another thing I thought about was, so I just watched X-Men First Class for the first time last night.
Yes.
I had thought, real quick tangent, I thought I had seen all the X-Men movies, mm-hmm. and then people started, like, describing stuff, and yeah. I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never seen these movies before in my life. And so I was thinking about how when, I guess spoiler alert, but this movie's old. I mean, but I did just watch it for the first time. I didn't know what was happening. Like, when the U.S. Army and the Russians were about to fire on mm-hmm. the mutants on that island, mm-hmm. and Charles is just like, they're just following orders, and Eric was like, I've been a victim of people who are just following orders, never again.
Right.
And so that came to my mind when you were talking about the reprogramming things. So mm-hmm. essentially, I just want someone or us to sit down and talk about, like, these ideas of reprogramming and yes. following orders and what makes a person and all these things. Mm. Someone write a thesis.
Somebody do it. Somebody smarter
that should be
than
me. I'm in my second, like, year of grad school. Yeah. Maybe that's my thesis.
You do it.
So back to The Mandalorian. Once again, I just really, really like that scene. Mm-hmm. And then the Mandalorian's like, so will you come help me? And he's like, no. And this is where we find out, because before he asked him to join his crew, and Quill remarked that he said something along the lines of he worked hard, or he thought that he wouldn't have to
mm-hmm.
Do things like that anymore. And then this time we find out that he was an indentured servant
mm-hmm.
to the Empire, mm-hmm. And
for three human lifetimes too. So he did it a long time.
And just hearing, who plays me? Nick Nolte, I think.
He's the voice. It's a different yeah. person who does the, who, because Nick Nolte's not that short. It's a different person doing the body interpretations, but it is his voice.
Okay, because I was going to say, I don't think I've ever heard of Nick Nolte until this, but he's amazing.
you do make me feel old all the time, but go ahead.
Oh wait, let me give you one more. I didn't know who Werner Herzog was until this, and well, everyone was like, he's so great, and I was like, well, I don't know who that is.
I'll tell you about Werner Herzog. He's more obscure though. It's like, I'm old, okay. and I kind of know about him, but I'm not, you know, he just has the reputation of being, you know, an eccentric director, and then has gotten into some of his own movies and stuff too. Like, I think he literally shot a movie about people who had to carry a boat over a mountain in a jungle, and he made the crew and people actually carry, you know, like, tow a boat over a mountain. It wasn't like we're gonna have special effects. It's like they're actually doing it. So it's like that's the story I remember about him, and I've never seen that movie. Yeah. And I don't, you know, but he does have a very distinctive voice, and it's fun to see mm-hmm. him, to hear him.
Yes, all of his comments on YOLO are, they feed my soul, they add years to my life. And so he says that he's retired. He's not going to do these things. And we learn about his backstory. And I'm just loving learning about everyone's backstory. I came into this thinking I would just care about the Mandalorian, and then I was like, oh well, now I care about everyone on this show. Mm-hmm. you all have my heart, which makes the ending like that much sadder.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also like this moment where the Mandalorian's like, I don't trust droids. I don't think that they can be essentially reprogrammed, all these things. Mm-hmm. And Quill's like, do you trust me? And the Mandalorian's like, yeah. And he's like, well, then trust my work. Mm-hmm. Like, trust that I knew what I was doing when I reprogrammed him, and he'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that just hit me on like this weird level where like I was like, that's a life lesson right there.
And they did they did a double fake, you know, on me, because I was like, IG-11 will be coming with me, and I was like, and I think I said it out loud, I have spoken. And then he kept talking, and I'm like, oh, I guess not. And then it's like, and then the blur, and I'll bring the blurgs too. I have spoken. It's like, oh, they got me, you know. I was too early on the I Have Spoken, so.
That reminds me of, like, at the end of songs when they have, like, that false ending, mm-hmm. and, like, you know that it's coming, so you try to count and do the end with them. I love doing it, because I guarantee you I always miss it.
Yeah, me too.
And let me know if I miss something, but the next time we see the Mandalorian and Cara Dune, they're, like, arm wrestling.
Yeah.
And this surprised me, so... Yes. I guess YOLO thinks that the Mandalorian's, like, actually in some danger. He mm-hmm. straight up starts force choking Cara Dune. And I'm yep. just like, first of all, look at you, protective of your dad.
Yeah.
Second of all, oh my goodness, let her go.
mm-hmm. Well, it also goes back to, and then the little bit of, you know, and I guess we'll get to the point where he force heals too. So we've seen him do dark side and light side force use in the same episode, and then it kind of goes back to this whole droid talk they're doing about droids aren't good or bad. It's they're, you know, reflections of the who they imprint upon, and so it's almost goes back to our earlier theories of why are they holding YOLO, and one of them, you know, was maybe they're waiting for him to come into his power and be older where he can control things more and be aware of what's going on. But they've brought him up, whoever they are that had him, and now they had that he will do what they ask him to do, and they can sort of control him, mm-hmm. even though he's got all the power, and so therefore they could use him for evil purposes, like, you know, force choking or whatever. So it's kind of like, you know, whatever the Empire wants to do with him, that seems to be on a different level, something different, since they will accept him dead. So, you know, it's a good thing that the Mandalorian did come along, because who knows what would have happened. You know, it might be 100 years from now or so, or 200 years before, but whenever YOLO came into his own power and had been influenced by evil people.
Yeah. I agree with that. I don't know why this just really, really sticks with me. This idea, and you sort of mentioned it, and thank you, because I didn't have, like, the right way to phrase it, but we've seen him do these things that we consider, like, really, really good. Like, mm-hmm. with the horned, creature.
Yeah, the mud horn.
Yeah. And then we've seen this thing of him choking someone. And no one is calling YOLO a Mary Sue or any of that. We just accept that YOLO is incredibly strong with the Force and can mm-hmm. do these things mm-hmm. at 50 years old. Mm-hmm. But I also really... And I didn't even know that I would appreciate this or I wanted this until it happened, but... YOLO still has to learn, because you legitimately thought that, like, the Mandalorian was in danger and this was something they need to do. And the Mandalorian had to be like, no, she's my friend. Mm-hmm. I'm not mm-hmm. in danger. It's okay. And so, I don't know. I like this idea of lifelong learning. We're always students. Like, mm-hmm. no one's ever perfect. No one ever reaches, like, this place where they know everything. And so I like this idea that even though I'm just like, oh, YOLO's cute. YOLO's super strong in the Force and all these things. And it's like, YOLO's still, like, a baby, even though YOLO's 50.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, after that, Quill's like, I've heard rumors of something like YOLO. So, like, once mm-hmm. again, these little dialogue pieces are just like, oh, I've never heard of a Mandalorian. I've never seen a Mandalorian. I don't know mm-hmm. what YOLO is and all these things. And so we're just learning more and more about the state of the galaxy. Yeah. What people do know and what people don't know. Mm-hmm. And then this comment comes after Quill making comments like, trust my work. I was an indentured servant. I used my hands and mm-hmm. my craftiness to set myself free. And the Mandalorian asks Quill to create something for YOLO to, like...
Right. It'd be more cushiony, yeah.
Yeah.
So, he just asked him to make it more comfortable. But then he's like, I'll do better than that.
I'm just like, oh, I love these moments. I love them. This is a family, which once again brings me to the sadness of the ending.
Yes.
And so Cara Dune and the Mandalorian are just chilling and they're talking, and IG-11 comes and he's like, I've come to serve another meal. And I was like, you're my kind of droid, because I will take all of the meals. Yes. And Mando proclaims that he's not going to leave the ship. And once again, he doesn't think that IG-11 can be reprogrammed, or, like, reprogram the fact that it was designed to take out targets, right. Especially because it was designed to take out YOLO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I... Well, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, just that's, yeah, again, we kind of mentioned it already, but that's him saying you can't outdo what you, your nature. Like, there's something inside droids, and then you could even take it out to people, that there's something inside of people that they cannot, you know, because of who they are or where they were born or whatever, they can't change. They're going to be a certain way, and you just got to, you have to be defensive of it. You can't do anything to change or encourage difference.
When I was younger, I read this book, and it ended up being it's still one of my favorite books in the world. It's called Along for the Ride by Sarah Dessen. Mm-hmm. And essentially, one of the biggest questions that is, it's like a regular YA romance novel, but mm-hmm. one of the questions that the book asks its audience, it's like, do people change, or can people change, and if they do, to what degree do they change? And so ever since I read this book when I think I was in junior high, I've always been fascinated with the idea of, do people really change? And so I'm very interested in the fact that it's being brought up in The Mandalorian. And so my initial gut like reaction was, I can't wait for this IG droid to prove the Mandalorian wrong. Like, I want him to believe that people can change for the better.
What do you think about all the different, like the arguments, especially between Quill and Kara going on during this time?
And this is one thing where, as an outside audience member, every single side makes sense. Especially with all the different horrors that I'm sure both characters have seen. You have every right to be distrustful, but I think you also have every right to be hopeful. But I also think you have every right to be cautious. But you have to, like, challenge yourself or take a risk in order to do something. And so I see both sides. And then I guess, and this is where the ever-present Star Wars theme of hope comes in, where I think it's like, okay, a lot of bad things have happened, yes, but a lot of good things have happened. You have to take the chance. If you want something to change, you have to take the chance. And so I think all of those arguments are just fascinating.
Yeah, I thought it was good. It was cool to see tension among people who are still on the same side. And you like all of them, too, you know. Even, you know, the only person I think in that situation that you may not have liked, but by the time you got to this point in the episode, you did, was IG-11. It's like you liked everybody. It's like, oh, that poor IG-11. He's just trying to, you know, like you say, be redeemed and change how he is. And he's protective. You know, he did step up there behind Quill when the argument got heated. And I'm like, oh, they're about to throw down with IG-11. But, you know, it was, but then YOLO's going to get involved too. It was like, there's all kinds of capable people there, but we like them all. Like you said, you can see all the points. It's like, you know, please stop fighting each other. You know, let's use that energy against, you know, Moff Gideon and people, but, you know, calm down. We all love each other. Come on, let's give a big group hug.
And I think part of that is the IG-11 we saw, like, we got to see him as himself. And yes, he went in there, and yes, he was going to terminate YOLO. And we were all like, please don't. And so I feel like there was like a collective audience cheer when the Mandalorian shot him, because we're like, oh, YOLO's safe. But I do know in the beginning, like, when YOLO kept trying, or not YOLO, but IG-11 kept trying to self-destruct in things, and the way he was acting, we were like, oh, that's funny. Like, you know, hashtag relatable. I too want to self-destruct when the situation gets hard or something like that. It's a likable character up until the moment that, you know, entrusted killed the internet's collective son. It's a likable character. And I think part of that also goes into me believing that IG-11 has been reprogrammed, because I sort of liked him before. If he had been straight evil or manipulative or terrible from the very moment that we met him, I would have been like, oh no, he's probably not reprogrammed. He's awful. But I liked him when we first met him, and I was like, yeah, I can believe that.
Yeah, I agree with you.
The Mandalorian and his crew meet with Grief, because we talked about the, like, the volcano dragon-esque scene. I feel like we did a good job with all of that. Well, I guess that comes later. But the Mandalorian and his crew meet with Grief, and Grief doesn't want Kara to come, because he's like, there are Imperials there and they won't like her. And he's like, Jawas will come after the ship. She should stay with the ship. And the Mandalorian's like, the whole time, he's like, nope, she's coming. And then he's like, well, she should at least cover her tattoo.
He did. I thought he did a good job acting that too, Carl Weathers, because it's like he's like fine when he realizes he's not gonna change his mind,
yeah.
And then he realizes, oh, wait a minute, you know, we gotta work together. And he takes a deep breath and he just like repeats it, not fine. You know, he just sort of like, I liked how he was in the stress of the situation, but then realized that, okay, we gotta, you know. And at that point, we didn't realize his motivation was gonna change, but if we were taking any man at his word, it was like, okay, we have to work together. We can't get in arguments. I'm just gonna let it go. I'm not gonna be mad about it. So I thought he did a good job at that part. You know, good directing as well.
Yes, and I think this is something that comes with the benefit if you're someone like me who doesn't catch all the details. We should watch it twice, because as you were saying that, I was like, oh yeah, he really just didn't want her there because the plan was to take them all out and take Yellow, and so he was just like, oh, we just have to account for this other thing. Oh my goodness, you're right. Great acting.
Yeah.
Grief asks for, he calls him the little one, which I think is super, super adorable. And the Mandalorian brings out Yellow, and I'm tense. I feel like everyone on the screen is tense, but I'm super tense as he sees him. Yes. And he's like, he comes in his little, like, floating pod, and he picks him up. And I'm just like, can everyone stop picking up Yellow, please? Because if you all drop him.
Yeah, again.
Yeah,
I think the client called it a pram, which I don't know if that's a real word or what they call it in the Star Wars universe, but pram.
A pram.
I'm like, okay, a pram.
I accept this.
I have.
Yes. So now we're coming up on the scene that I started talking about earlier, where they're walking over this dried lava looking covered road. And I'm just like, everything reminds me of Mustafar. I miss Anakin Skywalker. And they decide to camp for the night. And at first, I was like, why are you camping for the night? Why don't you just keep walking? You're all like,
right.
I don't know, these like soldiers and whatnot. Why don't you keep going? But then they're attacked by these dragon-looking Minok things. And I'm like, oh, this is why you camp for the night. So that you can be attacked. So that Grief can be injured. Look at that story plot.
It's like, I guess since he shot his droid, the droid that drove the little sled thing in episode 3 that the Mando was on trying to get away with, I guess maybe that was their only vehicle, because they were just like, we're going to walk. You know? It's like, you didn't have another vehicle or something?
Yeah.
You know.
Also here, right before they get attacked and things, this is where they go over their plan, and Grief is like, you're going to use Yellow as bait. And then Mando, you're going to kill the client. So they say that they're going to use Yolo as bait, and the Mando is going to kill him. And then Cara Dune's just like, how many stormtroopers are there? And he's like, there's 4. And as soon as he says there's 4, I'm just like, there's not going to be 4.
Yep.
And we're right in thinking that there's not going to be 4. I'm just like, if you say it like that, it's too easy, and there's no way that this is good. And this isn't even me thinking like, oh, next week is the finale. This is me just like, there's no way our heroes can have it easy.
Well, and that's, you know, that's everything they say, like, because when they were back there on the cooking out on the lava fields, the line before they got attacked was, nothing can go wrong, you know. And then, you know, they lose one of their, one of the people that's going to help them fight, they lose one of their bounty hunters at that point, too. So it's like, you know, something could go wrong.
It's every single time you say, oh, nothing can go wrong, what else could go wrong? At least it's not raining. Mm-hmm. That's like when the clouds open up and you're just like, oh, this is when everything goes wrong.
Yeah.
And so that's, of course, when they get attacked and Grief is injured. And actually, as soon as Cara Dune's like, where are the med packs? I need more med packs. And it's like the dragon things are like done trying to abduct the Blurgs, and they get the other bounty hunter, and Yolo's just walking up, and I was just like, oh my goodness, we actually get to see him like heal, because the Mandalorian didn't let him do it before. So I was like super pumped about that, but I was like, oh my goodness, all his energy is gonna go away. And Cara Dune's like, get Yolo away, and Grief's like, he's gonna eat me, and I'm just I'm just like, do you really think he's gonna eat you, Grief? Yes.
You're not a frog. I mean, come on. You're bigger than a frog. You're not going to fit in his mouth in one go.
You don't taste so like relax. A frog.
You're going to die of the poison of the dragon, so just relax, you know.
Mm-hmm. But then he heals him, and it takes a lot of his energy, and I just love Yellow so much.
Yes.
So the next biggest part that happens is Grief, like, I guess, like, shoots his men. Which I was like looking at something else at the time, and then I was like, wait, what just happened? And he's like,
which
Oh, go ahead.
I think he's lucky that he didn't get shot himself. I mean, it's like, you know, it's, that may have been a Frozen in Carbonite moment for me to a degree, because it was like, by the time he shot him, Kara and the Mandalorian had their blasters out, and nothing. Well, there was no reason they wouldn't have pulled the trigger as they pulled it out too, you know, because they didn't know that he was shooting past them, which is, you know, a classic Western trope, and it was good, but it's kind of like, you know, they should have had something where they reacted a little bit, not quite as quickly, because otherwise he really should be shot himself.
Mm-hmm. I feel that. So he shoots his associates, and then he tells them that the original plan was to kill the Mandalorian and take the child, or Gilo, mm-hmm. to the client. And so then they come up with a new plan where Grief will pretend that Cara Dune captured the Mandalorian, and they'll mm-hmm. go to the town to meet the client, because the whole time the Mandalorian's just like, she's coming, and she's like, I'm going. meanwhile, Quill will take Yolo back to the ship, so he takes him out of his little carrier, or the pram, mm. and then mm-hmm. they continue with the pram so that they can trick the client into thinking that Yolo is with them.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to the city, and the trooper is just like, chain code, and Grief provides him with one, and the trooper's like, 20 credits for the Mandalorian's helmet. and Grief's like, no, that's going on my wall. And then the yeah. Mandalorian's just like, on your wall. He's just like, this is how we do things around here. I just thought that whole exchange was funny, because it's like, honestly, their relationship reminds me of like Han and Lando, where you're just like,
yeah,
antagonistic, but also they love mm-hmm. each other.
Right, they, because Han and Lando have double crossed each other, or, you know, cheated each other, and yet they still depend on each other when they need to. And I kind of felt sort of similar. I didn't think Han and Lando, but now that you mention it, that's perfect. But, you know, what I thought was, okay, next season we're going to have, you know, Grief Karga is still going to be a character, and it's just going to be one of those characters of, he's a necessary evil. The Mandalorian will put up with him. They can get along, and they can sort of have a buddy relationship, but you also know you can't totally ever trust the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And which, while we're on that subject, I kind of hope, because it looked like, because, you know, one of the images that they have is for the Mandalorian when you're picking it. Sometimes it's just the Mandalorian himself, but when it's not, it's usually him and Kara and IG-11, and with what happened with Quill at the end, it looks like that this could be him not next season not going on his own, but having IG-11, because he's got nobody to go back to now, and Cara Dune too. So I hope that's what it is. I mean, I enjoyed seeing this, the Mandalorian sort of find where, you know, this relationship with Yolo and being a father and being protective and softening of a little bit. But I would like to have other characters in there as well. So having Kara and IG-11 in every episode with him, and then them go get in trouble next season, I think that would be fantastic.
Oh, definitely, definitely, same. That is my hope, and that we see them all go through each episode, all adventures.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. So as they're walking through the town, Kara keeps noting, she's like, there's more than four troopers, and then and Grief's like, there's four guarding the client, and then mm-hmm. that's still wrong, but we'll get there.
and these are still dirty, slouchy, just not real disciplined stormtroopers, you know.
Yep.
Kind of some that seem to have just sort of given up, and they're just sort of barely hanging in there.
Yep. And we see scenes of Quill and Yolo going back across like the volcanic ground, and then we're mm-hmm. back with Mando and Kara and Grief, and they're with the client, and the client even notes that the Mandalorian's armor is like beautifully forged, like by the correct people. And they sit at the table, and the client asks why Mandalore resisted the Empire's expansion. And I'm mm-hmm. just like, is this where that great purge comes in? Are you going to tell me what happened? Are you going to tell us about the flashbacks? But then they didn't, because there's a second season and they want to tease yeah. us.
mm-hmm.
And he's talking about how the Empire will improve all the lives and things like that, which goes back to the conversation that we were having earlier about like, the choices that we make and how we'd rather have freedom and we'd want to make our own choices.
Right.
And during this whole time, he's like, compare what the world the Empire could have built with what you have now. Is this world more peaceful? And we're all just shouting at the TV. It's like, yeah, but now we have a choice. We wouldn't have had a choice with the Empire.
Right.
And the client wants to see YOLO, and Grief's like, he's sleeping, and he's just like, Wall, be quiet. And I'm just like,
the worst. He is not quick on his feet. He is not somebody that is cool under pressure, I have to say.
No, I was thinking the exact same thing. So, of course.
And he was telegraphing it with his face, too. Even if you weren't suspicious, it's like, I'm suspicious now. What's that look on your face? You don't even believe what you're saying. I might have to open that pram a little quicker.
But then, of course, he gets a call, so he doesn't get to open it.
Yes.
And then the Mandalorian's like, give me the blaster, because he's like, man, you did not sell that at all.
It's like, we are dead. We are out of opportunities. This is it.
And Grief's like, you only have one shot. And once again, Kara's like, there's more than four stormtroopers. I just love that she's still stuck on that, because it's true.
Yeah. She was like, it's four. And he's like, finally he just quit trying. He was always easing her, like, well, it'll just be four. They'll run away, all that. And he's like, that last time, she's like, there's more than four. He's like, or it's not four. He's like, it's more than four. What can I say? You know, yeah, you're right. And we got more than we thought.
And I'm just like, you knew there was going to be more than four this whole time.
Yes.
And the call is from Moff Gideon. And he's like, the child's sleeping. And he's like, you might want to check. And I'm just like, how did you know?
Mm-hmm.
What is this actor's name again?
Giancarlo Esposito.
I feel like a lot of people were super. I saw him in the thumbnail when I went to click on this episode, and I was like, I can tell a bunch of people are happy that he has now showed up, because I know he's a fan favorite from Breaking Bad? Question mark.
Breaking Bad. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Breaking Bad. So I'm glad he's there. And then, is it the Mandalorian who fires? Then someone shoots.
No. That all the shots come from outside. He doesn't. Nobody shoots from inside the bar, the cantina.
Is that those troopers in black that are standing?
Yeah, the death troopers.
I was gonna call them death troopers, but then I was like, are those death troopers?
I'm pretty sure. You know, we saw them in Rogue One and other things since, but there was theories about them as far as we're going into Rogue One. Like, they may have even been sort of cybernetic, or just like you know, part human but with a lot of, you know, android parts, almost like RoboCop or something, sort of the harvesting dead former soldiers put together. So I don't know how much of that's true, but that was kind of like the thought that was going into them when they were designing them a little bit. And they have that garbled, you know, kind of lower speak than when it comes out of their helmets, as opposed to regular stormtroopers. But they do seem to be a lot more precise, a lot more intimidating, and just, you know, harder to deal with than the regular stormtrooper.
Yeah, and that's one of my favorite and least favorite things about stormtroopers. The fact that you have stormtroopers, death troopers, like there's just like shore troopers. There's so many types, and I'm just like, scout troopers.
when you're taking over every different kind of planet there is, you got to have a little bit of variety. It's a big galaxy out there, so
there's a different type of stormtrooper for everyone. You have diversity.
Well, you know that's cool when you're collecting the action figures, though, because you got a little bit of distinction here and there. And
that is true.
You know, even back in the when you actually played with action figures, it was cool to have a lot of different ones too.
That is true. And so all these troopers show up, and this whole time the Mandalorian's like radio, or he's like on the comm link to Quill, because he's like, are you back at the ship? And then these other troopers take off after, like, immediately as soon as they hear that. And he's like, we're pinned down, we're not gonna make it back, bail out, leave us, take the kid. And then it comes one of the tensest moments, like, of my life, as they're like racing after Quill, who's got like YOLO in his arms, and they're pinned down. And then like this really cool tie arrives, like carrying Moff Gideon.
Oh yeah.
And I was,
that was awesome.
I wrote down in my notes, I was like, ties are the coolest thing ever, and I'm glad I have one tattooed on my arm, and I'm glad it was my first tattoo, because I love those ships so much.
Oh, yeah. Well, you always have to, like, have ladders and stuff, and this one is, like, somebody finally figured out, like, hey, let's fold up those little solar panels and get closer to the ground. And it looks cool how it did it, too, but for just to go back for a second, though, what do you think, because that's kind of an interesting thing you just sort of made me think about. The dirty, nasty stormtroopers who overheard the information on the comm link go to Quill, and they jump on their speeder bikes and go after him. You know, they're the slouchy, dirty, very uninspired stormtroopers. And then we see all the bright, clean, shiny stormtroopers, tons of them, who they have not, you know, they are still on military discipline, and they have not, they shine their armor every day and everything. So why do you think Gideon shot all the, you know, the client and all his troopers? Now, he's got two or so out there trying to get the baby, and you know, are they going to be welcomed back? Are they going to be shot too and just the baby taken from them? What made you think, what do you think made him decide, I'm going to just kill the client and these kind of wretched stormtroopers?
I definitely think the two that went after Yellow are going to be shot as soon as they get back. I think it's this idea of you have this town that no one really interacts with anymore, and you have these people who aren't as disciplined as stormtroopers, and it's like, and they're just a means to an end. You have people like Moff Gideon who are like, I don't have time to train these people, I just need these like ground workers to do my bidding. They're expendable, but the people who are around me, I'm gonna because these people are around me, they reflect who I am, my character, what I instill, the values I instill. And he's probably like, I still believe fully in the Empire, the highest order, still stand at attention, still do all these things. So when you roll with me, you're going to act correct. The ones, lowly people below me, you're just a means to an end. You just do what you need to do. I can kill you. I don't need you. It's easier for me to kill you. And so I think that's why they were more like that, because they were under, and the client didn't care. Which we never got his name. He's just, I guess, always going to be the client. Unless they give it to us, like, retroactively next week.
maybe.
But, yeah, he's just like, I don't care about these things. I'm whoever to the Empire, but he's a Moth. He's like, I care.
Yeah.
Were you thinking of something? Okay. Or some?
No, I just was like, you know, the weird part to me is, like, they kind of wiped everybody out except for the actual people who really hated the Empire. So it was like, you know, you could have maybe used them in the future, but, you know, maybe it's one of those things, no witnesses too, you know. Okay. It's like you think you know what you have in there. You don't. It's very, very important to me. And, you know, I'm about to have it. Which all that stuff, I'm about to have it, and you might want to check to be sure he's sleeping in there. He's out there watching this go down from some vantage point. You know, he could tell what was going on, so why he didn't swoop in earlier. And he did say, I'm about to have it. But it's the wretched stormtroopers who are going after it, it appeared. So it's sort of a weird, you know, it's kind of like a weird dichotomy there of, like, he is using them and they're his, but at the same time they're not. But, you know, maybe those prove themselves, and maybe he goes, well, we can use you in our, you know, you guys are resourceful and y'all heard that, y'all went after it. We could use you in our army here, or whatever they call themselves. But I just think it was a lot more of just no witnesses, because he seemed to leave the people alive who really were out to get him, and who he probably should have wanted to kill first.
I think maybe I'm going to make my own little prediction of what I think is going to happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know we do this later, but I think that maybe he was the one who had Fennec, and she's going to be in next week's, and she's somewhere. I mean, obviously they went super, super far away, so who knows, like, how she saw them, but, like, I don't know. She has something to do with his vantage point of why he can see so much and things, because she's somewhere with her scope just owing him her life, because he, like, helped put her back together. So that's the...
So you think he's the worst person that showed up at the end of episode 5?
Yeah, well, at least I'm hoping. I just really want her to come back, because I want Ming-Na to come back, so I'm going to say yeah.
I want her to come back too, but I kind of wonder, because there's going to have to be something. I mean, you know, there's the possibility that was, I don't think this is what it is, but I mean, it kind of dawned on me some today. There is the possibility that this is just, it was just a little nod to maybe being a Boba Fett character, and we're never going to pay that off. It's just like, we're going to imagine somebody walked up on her dead body, hopefully not dead body, on Tatooine, and he had some jingling spurs, and we think Boba Fett, but we're never really going to show Boba Fett, because, you know, that's just, we, you know, we don't want to really go that far, but we're just going to kind of leave that. But I honestly think, though, more, you don't just put somebody like that in a teaser at the end and not show their face or who they are. That person is probably going to come back, and I guess it might be the way that the Mandalorian and the crew get out of this, and Yolo get out of this predicament. Like, it looks like all hope is lost. Yet these people that we didn't count on, who were sort of tracking behind the Mandalorian and kind of following his path of destruction, kind of come in at the last minute and save. Now, who that actually is, I don't know. You know, Sabine and Ahsoka, we can still do that, even though this isn't Ezra Bridger, because he's way too old to be Ezra Bridger. But, you know, we can get some little Sabine and Ahsoka. I think that would be fun. Or possibly the covert. You know, we haven't seen the covert. Maybe they come in and save him again, too. But they're going to have to pay that off. And I'm just, my thing is, I'm leaning that it wasn't Gideon finding her. But, I, you know, but that is a good possibility, so I'm not sure.
Right. And then the so back to the episode. The troopers are gaining on Quill and Yolo, and the whole time, like, the Mandalorian's just, like, radioing to them, and I'm stressed because Quill's not answering, and the Mandalorian's just like, "Are you there? Did you make it? What's happening?" And this is when this moment, and you said some of his lines, which I just, he just delivered them. So, like, this is the first time I've ever seen him act. And
he, oh, really? He's great. His voice is awesome.
You are completely right, and I completely agree, because he's just like, "You have something that I want," and I'm just like, "Oh yeah, they do." I just, like, feel it in my bones. Especially that line where he's like, "It means more to me than you'll ever know." And then we get to that scene where we just see Yolo on the ground, and I'm just like, "What happened?" And then we see Quill, and I'm just like, I really didn't think that was how this episode was going to... I really didn't. And that is how they ended the episode. I was like, "Oh, I'm back in my Walking Dead Game of Thrones feels. I thought I was safe, and I'm not."
Yeah, it's... well, you know, Star Wars is... We still have death in Star Wars, even though they talk about it's for 11 and 12-year-old kids, and we've talked about how we're not going to have, like, the Red Wedding and a bunch of different things like that. But, you know, we did have Obi-Wan in A New Hope go. We had Kanan in Rebels. Spoilers for those things if you haven't seen them. But I think if you're listening to our show right now and you've watched this much of The Mandalorian, you have seen these other things I'm talking about, I hope. But, you know, there's lots of, you know, we had Han Solo in The Force Awakens. So those things do happen to characters that you care about. It's just not as wide as spread. You know, everybody doesn't feel like they're on the table. Sometimes when you lose one like that, you can at least take a sigh of relief. Just take a and think, okay, well, if Quill's the one that's gone and has passed away or died, got killed, then I think Cara Dune and Mando and IG-11 and Yolo, of course, are all safe now. So, okay, we could take a breath, be happy. We have had that sacrificial death that is going to kind of get us in the feels, but we're not going to lose all of them.
I feel that.
Unless it's Rogue One, but this is not Rogue One.
You're right. This is not Rogue One. I was having a conversation with someone else where, I don't know if I already said this in one of a previous recording, but I always pick my favorite character always end up being the main character, and except for Game of Thrones, that has not failed me normally because my main character is safe,
right?
Except Game of Thrones, but then I ended up being okay. So you saying that, I was just like, okay, as long as the Mandalorian's fine. Yeah. And of course Yolo.
Well, it's called, like, the Mandalorian. Okay, so, you know,
that's but we have never seen his face. Yeah. Something could happen to him and another Mandalorian could take over. I don't like that I've said this. I'm knocking on wood at this very moment. Well, because
that's the Elliot Hope that the Ezra fit, the dead Ezra theory, not the Ezra's dead, but the theory's dead, that the Mandalorian is Ezra Bridger. The only hope that it has, because, you know, it was kind of funny when last week Rand was saying, "Mando, is that you under that helmet?" And we're like, "Well, how would he know if it wasn't? How would he know if somebody didn't swap it?" You know, maybe the original Mandalorian had wanted to sneak off, and he'd taken all his armor off and set it up against a speeder bike to fool somebody. Yeah, and then Ezra comes up afterwards and goes, "Hey, there's some cool armor here." And, you know, so, you know, that's why he decided not to do that to Toro in the last episode or two episodes ago. Because he's like, "Yeah, that's how I got this armor to begin with." But, you know, I say all that knowing that he recognized Quinn and all the other people, so he is the guy from back then. But, you know, I was just trying to give my theory one last little breath of hope before it's crushed to death.
Wasn't it you who mentioned that there was a comic or something of some sort about someone who finds Boba Fett's armor?
Yeah, yeah. And that, you know, there's a lot of speculation on the internet was that that was Boba Fett that showed up at the end of the Gunslinger episode. But, mm-hmm. you know, if you hear the sound effect that tells you that that's what the sound effect we associate with Boba Fett. But do we associate with Boba Fett the person, or Boba Fett's armor and his is what makes that noise, or what he's wearing? And if it's what he's wearing, we know for a fact that Boba Fett is not wearing that armor anymore. We know that, you know, for all the people who say they hope he's dead in the bottom of the Sarlacc and not resurrected, somehow his armor got out. So if the armor got out, I'm assuming the person in the armor probably came out too. Now, how long it had been down there, whether or not he was dead, I don't know. But the armor got out of the Sarlacc somehow, but was abandoned. So if it was going to be anybody, if it is Boba Fett related, I would say that it's Cobb Vanth, who is a former slave. He is on Tatooine. He's a former slave. And he used that armor to be sort of the sheriff or marshal in town to try to, you know, bring law to the lawless. So, to me, if we don't get a payoff, that'll be what I always think. Or maybe it's just a debate. You know how Dave Filoni is. He likes to have the Ahsoka Lives question mark t-shirt, Ahsoka Lives exclamation point t-shirt. You know, he likes to make people guess and wonder. So he might let fandom sort of debate, is that Cobb Vanth? Is that Boba Fett? And never really answer it, or wait for 4 or 5 years to answer it. But yeah, if it was anybody that is making that noise because of the armor, I think it's not Boba Fett. I think it's this Cobb Vanth character who is in the Aftermath trilogy by Chuck Wendig.
Okay, well, we will have to stick with that. And so that sort of gets into our looking ahead. We've gone a little bit on what we expect for, you know, how it connects to Tross, what's mm-hmm. going to happen in this last episode. I don't really have anything else to add, do you?
No, all I can say is that he's going to get out of it somehow. Now, whether or not I guess the question is, are they going to be so cruel, not that they'll do a Game of Thrones and kill off some people, but are they going to be so cruel to have this season end and us have to wait a year or however long before the next season comes out with YOLO in the hands of some ex-Imperial or Gideon or something as they take off and leave the planet? The Mando escapes, Cara Dune escapes, but they're separated, and that's the closing credits. That would be like, are they going to do that to us? Or are they going to at least give us some sort of satisfaction that he's safe for a moment, but they still got to be on the run next season too? I don't know. What do you think? You think they're going to be together at the end of episode 8 or be separated?
I want them to be together, mm-hmm. but I want something else to be. I want like another 40, maybe a full actual 60-minute episode where something else kind of gets introduced to serve as a cliffhanger. I mm-hmm. like the idea of season one sort of being self-contained, and mm-hmm. I don't really have a good reason for that. Mm-hmm. I just like the idea of if you wanted to watch season one as its own thing, you could. Mm-hmm. But obviously you need something. I mean, I feel like with the reception and the production, we're all going to come back for season two.
Yeah.
But I get the appeal of having a cliffhanger or something to make sure that we come back for season two.
I mean, I've changed. I was of the opinion that YOLO was just a season one MacGuffin and we're going to move on to something else in season two. But at this point now, I believe he's part of the show from here on. Yeah. I mean, he's a permanent part of the show. You know, maybe if there is a season ending episode, maybe that's when he gets sent off to the Lasats or something. But other than that, I think, yeah, he's here to stay. So they're going to be at least a pair. And I hope it's IG-11 and Cara Dune as well, though.
Same. If the episode does end with them separated, I will call my good friend Pedro and ask him for some hints for season two, and we will make it a USW Patreon exclusive. Ooh. I'm just kidding, but hopefully yes.
Oh yeah, and that, well, you know, when you're over there interviewing for the nanny position, you can maybe like say you've interviewed me and had some questions. Now I have a few questions for you before I take this position.
Yes. And then I really like this next sort of segment idea that you've introduced, which is give a hunter a fob. What do you want to see brought in or used in future episodes? So do you want to take this first, or would you like me to take this first?
You go ahead.
So I really So, okay, so I took this two ways. The first way is not at all in the way that it was written out, and it's the fact that I don't want to see Boba Fett in this show ever at all in any form. But taking the question in the way that it was written, I really liked the idea of planet hopping and seeing different places.
Yeah.
But I would also like to see, it doesn't have to be, because I know one of the criticisms of going to Tatooine is the fact that we went to Tatooine and we've been there before, and this is a good chance to see places we've never been before.
Right.
So it doesn't have to be Naboo or Coruscant, but I want to go to a place that's crowded like that. I want to go to, like, some type of city thing. And I think we've talked about this before. But yeah, I don't want to just go to desert or deserted or backwater places. I want to know what kind of shenanigans can we get like into like in the big cities. And so that's what I would like to see.
I'd like to see that too. I also, on the Boba Fett thing, if Boba Fett showed up as Boba Fett from the original trilogy or from Star Wars, Clone Wars, yeah, that would be redundant, because that's kind of almost the same character as the Mandalorian. They're close. I mean, Mandalorian seems to have a better, you know, light side, a side of good to him more than Boba Fett. But Davin did mention something on the main show, and I think, well, if they went that way, that I think that would be really interesting. I think that would be a great way to actually use Boba Fett, and then it be Boba Fett out of the armor. And maybe we don't even get told it's Boba Fett. Maybe he comes in as somebody who's older and does some mentoring to the Mandalorian, and only later do we realize that it's Boba Fett, that he's become mild with age. He's, you know, whatever happened to him in the Sarlacc pit, he's decided I'm dumping that lifestyle and I'm going to try something, you know, because if you think about how that character, you know, that's what he's been his whole life since he was a child. So to think that maybe he decides, and we talk about choice, maybe he's like, you know, I've been living what people have decided for me or has been determined for me before this. Maybe I'm going to go a different route and do something that is less aggressive and warlike and just sort of, I don't know, you know, something on a farm, you know, have a moisture farm somewhere. But, you know, it'd be interesting to be surprised. Like, we introduced to a character and he has a different name. And then by the end of it, realize, oh, yeah, by the way, I was Boba Fett back. I used to wear Mandalorian armor too myself one day, but then I outgrew it.
That's really interesting, especially, and all this is getting me intrigued. Not that I have anything against Boba Fett, but I also don't care about Boba Fett. But this makes me interested and care, just like a little bit.
Right.
So I would like to see that explored. I was looking him up on Wikipedia, because I don't know anything really about him.
Yeah.
Once again, I did not care. And so one of the last paragraphs is... the character is noted for speaking very few words and never removing his helmet in the original trilogy. And I know that, like, especially like when we had the reference to like wondering if the Mandalorian was a Gungan and things. So obviously we have references to every or a lot of the eras of Star Wars. But I know when they were like showing us this during like Celebration and leading up to this, they were like original trilogy. And I know when the Mandalorian was like, I never take off my helmet, everyone was like, okay, but we've seen Mandalorian's faces before, what is this? And as they were going through these rules, everyone was kind of like, that doesn't really jive with what we know. And then I do know, like, I guess we, the collective we of the internet, have been like, okay, maybe it's this new thing that happened. We're getting more clues now. Like, the Mandalore was the Empire. Maybe this is something they do now. This could be, like, a family thing, whatnot. But I was just curious, since they seem to be so fixated, or at least they, as in Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau, fixated on the original trilogy, and I guess we never saw Boba Fett's face in the original trilogy. Do you think that maybe could have been the, like, the birth of this idea, or one of the things that's like where that came from, or why they did it, besides their other rules and things?
I don't think so, because Boba Fett in the Clone Wars is around and he has his helmet off a lot. I mean, when we first see him, he is still a child. So he doesn't even have armor or stuff like that. So I don't think it's necessarily rules from him. What I do believe is that, because we have had several characters mention, you know, like Mithril at the very beginning. Is it true that, you know, I heard you guys don't ever take off your helmets? We had one of the farmers talk about, hey, I've read all this, you know, is it true about Mandalorians doing this? Because I've read a lot about it. And we've had Quill say, you know, I've read all the things. Your ancestors, you know, fought the Mythosaurs and things like that. I think there is, like anything, like you think about present-day stuff, how, you know, like say in America, we write books, comic books, novels, and we're incorporating things from other cultures, and we get it wrong. You know, we sensationalize it, and maybe the people who are writing it know it's wrong, or maybe they don't know any better because they're not familiar with the culture really, but they've heard little bits of things, and they want to make an interesting story, and so they change it in a way that's more exciting. And I think that those, you know, there's writings out there, there's stories, there's novels, whatever they would call them, you know, the holopad, whatever. Just different things that people are reading about Mandalorians for entertainment, and these people who have, you know, like the Cobb Vanth in the Aftermath trilogy, decide that they see that armor and they have been in a situation where they've been part of the downtrodden. The Empire has been overthrown, and they now feel empowered to sort of make their own way in a world that they had been mistreated in and had suffered in, and taken on the persona of Mandalorians as they know them from stories as opposed to reality. They have created this their own culture, which is, you know, appropriating something that they didn't totally understand, but they want to use to, you know, just to change their outlook on life.
All right, thank you for that. And so now we've gone through our recap, we've gone through our bounty, we've gone through our Frozen Carbonite moments, we've given a hunter a fob. It is now time for our closing thoughts.
My jetpack is ready in case I need to take a flight. Got my trusty blasters and I'm itching to start a fight. If my bounty escapes, then I guess I just won't get paid. These are the days when a honest fortune can be made. It's just another Mando fun day. Sweating in the sun day. Shooting my gun day. My prayer's gonna run day. Just another Mando fun day. Ahead of IG-88, I got to make the bounty all mine. Other hunters want it, they're all trying to cut in line. It takes so long cause RSing doesn't fight fair. Outdueled Cad Bane, but Bossk is already there. It's just another Mando fun day. Sweating in the sun day. Shooting my gun day. My prey is gonna run day. It's just another Mando fun day.
So don't forget, the next episode is on Disney Plus next Friday, December 27th. You have to wait a little bit longer because this one came out on a Wednesday. But that is okay. We all have The Rise of Skywalker to tide us over. I'm sure we'll all be talking about that on Twitter. Don't forget to check Unmistakably Star Wars' YouTube page for cool videos. The website for great articles, and then of course look out for recordings of the main show. Don't forget to follow Unmistakably Star Wars on Twitter at UnmistakablySW. And Carl, where can the good people find you on Twitter?
Well, they can find me at HasslerCarl, and also if they want to send us some questions for like a recap of the whole first season episode that we plan to do, and people want to have questions or comments or have us comment about something, they can send me an email to Carl Hassler. That's all together. I spell Carl with a C, CARLHASSLER .usw for Unmistakably Star Wars. So it's carlhassler.usw@gmail.com. And we'd love to hear from you guys, have critiques, have questions, and maybe read some of those on that final episode.
Thank you. And then I am at Twitter at Gina Sanders _. And then if you want, you can also DM me questions and we'll be sure to add those. And I just wanted to say thank you everyone for listening and have a good morning, night, evening, whatever. Bye.
Unmistakably Star Wars is a member of the Star Wars Escape Pods Network. Explore more great content and get to know our sister shows at WeAreEscapePods.com and on Twitter at WeAreEscapePods. The Star Wars Escape Pods Network, promoting positivity in fandom.
This party's over.
Move along.